Hello and welcome back to another Room with a Review podcast. I really need some kind of introductory phrase, catchphrase, something. But for now, it's just going to be hello and welcome back to the Room with a Review podcast, if I can get it out clearly. So, new episode. I've got a few lined up. I was trying to decide which one and what order I wanted to put out when. But this one jumped up. You've obviously seen the title, so you know what I'm talking about. It's going to be Parasite, a movie that won Best Oscar at the Oscars earlier this year, Academy Awards. It was great. It was as good as advertised. So after watching it, I was very tempted to just double down and rewatch it immediately, which is very rare. Not many movies do that, and some you shouldn't do that. But Parasite was one that absolutely warranted it. I didn't do that. I will be rewatching it soon. It was so good. So this is a difficult one to even try to describe. If you haven't seen it, watch it, because there is no way I can explain it, and I'm absolutely going to do everything I can to avoid giving away spoilers. It's still a relatively recent movie. After another 2 or 3 years, you know, I wouldn't care as much. But wow, it's so interesting. It doesn't mess with you in the way that something like Fight Club does, and obviously that would be, you know, the spoiler of Fight Club there. Once you know what it is, that isn't what happens in Parasite. So don't worry about that. Or is it? Maybe it is. Got to try to avoid these spoilers. But it's got twists that really you don't see coming. Because some of them are twists on twists. And others, you start to think it's going one direction, and then it just pulls a rug out from your feet. It's bizarre. And there's a very clear turning point in the movie. And I think it's definitely, when we talk about text, we often talk about the three-act structure. I don't know that it necessarily applies to this one. I think the halfway point is a very clear halfway point, and a three-act structure where we've kind of got this early phase and then the rising tension and the kind of ending of it all. I don't think that's the case here at all. I think it's really more of a two-act structure. We've got the setup, and then we've got the execution of it all, the consequences of it all. As I said, there's a very clear turning point about halfway through the movie, and at that point, even then, you think, oh, okay, this is crazy. Like, didn't see this coming at all. This is very unexpected. But for the next remainder, like the next hour of it or so, there's still more things you don't see coming. And the first hour was a bit like that too, that you thought, okay, where is this going? All right, I see how this is working out. I get what's happening. And then there's the first major twist. And you go, oh, wow. But then the second and third and fourth, so on, and it just keeps going. It's crazy. So basically, I'm trying to really not give away anything. I should have written this down before I started. So what? I didn't do it. But it essentially is a very poor South Korean family who need jobs. They kind of make money doing whatever they can, just doing bits and pieces of things and saving on in different ways. And it's a typical nuclear family, two parents and then one daughter, one son. The son's friend tells him of a job that he can do, tutoring a wealthy high schooler in English. And so the son says, sure, why not? Takes up the job, and then he managed to get jobs for the rest of his family, working for this family. So a lot of the movie focuses on this contrast between the wealthy and the poor, and that really is one of the key messages of the movie. But it's not, oh, let's feel sorry for these poor people. It's also more than that. The whole title of the movie, Parasite, is about how they kind of depend on each other, which is an interesting way to think about it, I think. Because if we look at it, go, oh, those suffering poor people, the people who live in poverty, so unfortunate for them. We can think of it like that, and there's a lot of sympathy there. But it's very much a negative view. Whereas a lot of people that don't have a lot of money, you know, even if they're not wealthy, but they're lower middle class sort of thing, they're not necessarily suffering. They have a sense of agency. They have capacity to choose what they do and live their lives in a certain way. And I think there's a lack of acknowledgement of that. So, yeah, I think what we really need to think about is not that we have rich people that are really fortunate to live that way and good on them for managing that, and then poor people that we feel sorry for. I think this movie goes beyond that. It goes, no, we can feel sorry for both, we can feel happy for both, and we can feel the same things for both. And this movie kind of shows us the negatives of both, if that makes sense. So I think it goes one step further than most movies do if you think about a lot of movies about anyone that's in kind of a lack of money situation, whether it's poverty or more. You got Pursuit of Happiness, which, you know, is so on the nose. I think it's a fine movie. It's great, feel good movie. Not a huge fan. It's good, it's fine. Got some good messages in it, good quotes. Not for me. And then when you've got other things like, I never saw Fences, but I imagine it would be pretty similar. I'm trying to think of something else. Not to the extremes of 12 Years a Slave, but these kind of movies about anyone that's not in a wealthy position, it's very interesting to see it, for them to be shown as, having that agency that I think is needed. So I think it's a really, really good movie in that sense. The message alone makes it a really good movie. But boy, the story and the twists, incredible. I think I thought it was, I'd heard it with more of a horror movie before I saw it, and it was also a bit comedy. It's somewhere in between the two. It's something that, it's like an M. Night Shyamalan movie, but better. If you think about the best M. Night movie, people would say different things. Most people would probably say The Sixth Sense. Obviously, that's been ruined now. Everyone knows the spoiler there. But those kind of twists, I think this does a better job with those. I really, really enjoyed it. And yeah, I definitely want to watch more of this lovely director's work. I know there's a few around there. Snowpiercer's one. And there's another one about a train. Or is that Snowpiercer? I don't know. It's interesting movies, but basically, yeah, I do need to watch more of Bong Joon-ho, I think is how you say it. I want to see more of his stuff after seeing this one, because I think it'll be interesting to see what it's like. Okja, that's the one. What's it like? Okja. Oh, yeah, it's about a beast of some kind that's kidnapped. I'm not sure. Snowpiercer is the one with the train. So I'd like to watch some of those just to see whether this is a style or whether it's just unique to Parasite. But definitely, I know some students that had seen it over January when it was kind of big in December, and they thought it was really, really good. So I think it's definitely one that, in terms of storytelling, it's good for teachers to have seen, because it's also something that a lot of students are going to try to replicate, I think, in written stories. So their narrative, they're going to try to put too many twists, which it's always a difficulty when a lot of what they're writing, they do for creative writing narratives is short story, and really short story. It's not really that long. I mean, you're getting up to around 1,000 words and that's about it. That's not that long of a story. You can't really have that many twists. So I think it's something we need to be mindful of. But at the same time, discussing how those twists happen and whether they're good, whether they're bad, whether they're effective. There's one or two that I'm a bit on from the movie, you know, as I think more on it. But overall, I think it was good. So getting discussion of that kind of stuff, particularly for your top students that are really interested in this kind of thing and those creating of texts, this is a great source material for so many things. But as I was saying, it's somewhere between a comedy, horror, drama. It's not really a genre-specific movie. So, yeah, I went into it thinking it was going to be much more of a horror movie. It's not really, but at the same time, it's not a horror movie. So I don't think we need to define it as such. It's just, yeah, it does have some horror elements, is maybe the best way of thinking about it. But in terms of teachability, I mean, I think the rating pretty much puts it out of contention for teaching it. But as I said already, as a point of reference and as a good source material and inspiration for students, I think because it does so much different stuff, it's really worthwhile. The fact that it's also not a Western movie, it's got the subtitles. As Jun Ho said during his Oscars acceptance speech, the moment we start to acknowledge more movies that have subtitles and are not English movies, you know, we're going to open ourselves up to so many more. And I know there's been plenty of good movies like that. There's lots of people that have made that transition from non-Hollywood to Hollywood from overseas. I know France puts out a ton of movies. Nigeria's got a big film industry, as does obviously the Bollywood and Indian movies. And Pakistan does quite a few. And then you've got some Hong Kong, Japan, East Asian sort of region. So there's a lot out there. You just got to go looking for them. But for instance, Amelie is a great example of a movie that's very good. Ang Lee's done a really good job kind of crossing over into mainstream. So there's definitely some, and I mean, Taika Waititi, you know, a New Zealand filmmaker who's absolutely rocketed it up. So they're definitely out there. Just, you know, I think it's good though to be able to have these in your arsenal of, oh, yep, so how about this, and being able to refer to them, I think is where this movie really fits in for teaching wise. But as I said, in terms of narrative and structure, I think there's a lot you could do with it, but you definitely have to really think about the who you're teaching it to. I think it's definitely going to be your better students, your students that are really good at not necessarily analyzing movies, but have a strong grasp of narrative features and functions and form. So yeah, it probably rules out majority of students that you would teach it to anyway. But as they get towards the older end, there are some that I think would do great with it. I know that, for instance, in the extension syllabus, year 11, there's places for it. As a related text, I'm sure Worlds of Upheaval would be a good choice. As a related text, I think there's lots of places where it could fit in, but you've really got to, you could only do it with certain students, and you can't do part of the movie. It's not one of those, it doesn't have those really unique, distinctive film components. And I don't think there's scenes necessarily you could pick out and go, oh, yeah, I can watch this and this tells me everything I need to know. I think there's too many motifs and overlapping and repetitive kind of motifs. Yeah, as I said, motifs, basically, that are used throughout it. So, yeah, it's an interesting, very, very interesting movie, and it's definitely worth watching again. Now, I've mentioned a few times in the last, well, few podcasts at least, but over the few months worth that I've done of this list of 100 best movies. And I know there's various lists. There's the AFI list, which is the American one. And they redid that list, I mean, several years after the original one. There's various other lists. There's the IMDb one, which kind of ranks theirs. There's this other one that my friends have, which I've been working through slowly. I've knocked off a couple more of those. Some of them will appear in the next few weeks, some won't. But I'd need to rewatch it, but I think I would put this in my top 100. Now, it's, as I said, in hindsight, I'm cooling on it a little bit, but it was so unique and original that alone will put it there. But I think in terms of its legacy, I think it's going to be even more important than that, that it really broke new ground. The foundation had been laid, but I think this one built upon whatever was already there and just charged off into a new direction. And so, yeah, when we want to talk about barriers and breaking those down, which the movie kind of deals with to an extent, I think that this absolutely has to be in discussion, because we could talk about, I mean, as I already mentioned, Taika Waititi, his movie Jojo Rabbit was great. But if you've seen Boy, I think maybe Boy is a better movie than Jojo Rabbit. Maybe I need to rewatch those again. But Parasite, I think, absolutely pushes Western audiences. Now, he was hinting that there's probably other ones that he's seen that most haven't. So that's something to consider too. But I definitely think that in terms of in 50 years' time, when we look back on what movies look like and cinema looks like in, you know, 2070, it's going to be very, very fascinating where it all kind of goes. You've got a lot of movies, and I've talked about a couple, and I've probably got, I might just do one or two more as they come up, of movies that are the single shot movies. So I talked about 1917, and I've done Skyfall and Spectre and one or two others. I know Children of Men is a good one, but I probably won't get around to that. So there's a lot out there like that. Are we going to go down that path, or are we going to go down this completely other path? Is there going to be something new that pops out? And I think this is definitely a threshold that'll be interesting for us to cross. On top of it being an original and really interesting movie, I think the next threshold we really need to cross over into is female directors. There are some really, really good ones out there, and I know I haven't really gotten to any yet, but it's there's some that are definitely going to come up soon. I know that I haven't watched it, but the name of what's the name that did Killing Eve and was it Fleabag, I think. She wrote the new James Bond movie. So there's things like that. There's definitely a growth there, but I think we still need a lot more. And it is happening. And this is another barrier we've got to cross too, is the cultural side of it. So in terms of 50 years' time, when we look back, go, oh, what are some really groundbreaking movies? I think, I mean, Parasite's gonna stand above so many for a very long time. If we look backwards now from this point, Parasite stands above so many for so many reasons. And when we look forward, it will probably start, I think there'll be a trend where we start to see a few more that are kind of from this, not necessarily like South Korean movies, but or cultural, but just movies that come from places we don't expect, I think, that are not unprecedented, but catch a lot of attention for various reasons. And that's what I think Parasite's done, is there's so many good reasons why people are paying attention to it, that that's why it's going to be groundbreaking and have a long legacy. So yeah, I'm not really going to get into it as a film, because I think it's very hard to discuss it. I'll talk about some of the features, but I can't give away too much of the plot, so I'm limited in what I can say. In terms of camera work, yep, it's fine, no issues. You know, it's not, as I already said, it's not a Sam Mendes, I don't know, Tarantino, Scorsese, whoever you want to pick, really innovative camera work. It's not anything like that. Christopher Nolan, whoever. It's nothing like that, but the plot itself is very interesting. The characters are great, by the way. There's such strong character work. Some of it's really subtle, some of it's really, really obvious. And some of the characters that even play around with you. I mean, there's one scene where the father of the family, you think, oh no, this is going to go really badly. He's very upset, he's angry. And he just kind of takes on the chin, and it's so good to see that. And you just think, oh, he's going to react, and it doesn't happen. And it's great that it doesn't. So there's all sorts of character work, and each of these characters, the family, are unique in their own way. And yet you can see how they work together as a family, and it really comes together, which I think is another good, important part of the film, this idea about family and how you stick together. So in terms of, yeah, the character work, it's all really good. And so sound wise, music, fine, didn't really, it definitely contributed to it all, and it was well done, but it wasn't, again, innovative in any way. I don't think the form itself is innovative. I just think it does so much with a really good story and a really good concept that's what matters. So in terms of, it's not innovative in how these things are shown, but it is innovative in what is being shown and therefore how it's being shown. So I'll leave it at that for Parasite, but I absolutely implore you all, go and watch it. It is so good, just so good. And as I said, I'm probably going to rewatch it very soon again myself, because I feel like it's one of those movies that the more you watch it, the more things you notice. I could be wrong. It could be that, oh, I've seen it and I get it all and I know where it's going. But who knows? We'll see. And I'll be back in a moment with Ad of the Week. Ad of the Week. This week, I almost thought I wasn't going to have one. I was going to have to kind of scrounge around. It's going to be another one that I think is not a great ad. So I'm hoping that at some point I'll be able to pick up a good example of an ad again in the future. But this one is a... strange choice in how they wanted to advertise their product. But before I get to it, I think it's actually something that's going to become a bit of a problem. And it's going to be interesting to see how companies continue to advertise, how much money they allocate to advertising while they're not making as much money. Obviously, big companies or more essential items will make that money and they'll be fine. I know Dettol's doing a lot, but you can't get multiple actors together, really. You can't get the crews to make these ads together. So there's going to be a lot more voiceover work. It could be interesting to see if we go down the animation path. If we just get a product being used, old ads being reused, stock footage. I think that's some of what we're going to start to see. It'll be interesting to see how the advertising industry reacts to all of this, because they're one of those kind of third level impacts. You've got your first level are obviously your retails and services industries, like your restaurants, who some are able to stay open, which is good for them. But any retail shop pretty much can't function right now, which makes it very difficult for them and all their employees. Obviously, that's very difficult for them. And then your other services, things like swimming pools and parks and all those kind of things. Your second level then is your not your retails, but the bigger expenditure stuff where people don't have the money to spend it on. So you're more online kind of shopping, luxury, not luxury items, but the extra things that people don't normally need that they sometimes buy. Subscriptions will be interesting, because people obviously want things to do, so things like Netflix are going up, but other things going down. I mean, oil has dropped massively. Car sales, airlines, all those things, they're that second wave of more expensive items that people definitely won't be, like tourism industry, absolutely crushed. And some of that obviously is overlapping with the first. But then this third level is these advertisers, your accountants, lawyers, things like that. I mean, they're not... Who's getting sued at the moment? No one's using lawyers. No one's using... Like, advertisers still need to create ads, but companies... You know, there's going to be fewer companies able to afford pricey ads. So it'll be interesting to see how that goes, because the wealthy companies that are surviving will keep working. I know... McDonald's has an ad out about how you can use drive-through still. They're a wealthy company. They're always going to be fine. But some other companies are really going to struggle, and how they make ads will be very interesting. I've noticed that already there's a bit of a trend of having softer, gentler ads. I think Coles and Woolworths have both done them about reassuring everyone about how they're open and you can do things, just reminding people of items. But they don't need to advertise right now. It'd be a waste of their time. Everyone's using those places. So, yeah, I think the advertising industry is going to be really interesting to see how they recover and bounce back. But, so be it. Let's push on with this week's ad of the week. And I've got to say, the first time I saw this ad, I was just kind of flicking. I don't know if I was watching anything on TV or it just kind of popped up. I was like, oh, what is this? I thought, oh, well, this could be a good ad of the week. That's actually how my thought process went when I saw this ad. And I was right. Unfortunately, I'd missed kind of the first 2 to 3 seconds that told me what product it was. So I saw lots of red, really kind of upbeat, up-tempo music, like poppy kind of music. And then just people jumping around, smiling, dancing, having fun. wearing a lot of red. Now, if you've seen this ad, you might know what product I'm talking about. But my first thought was, oh, okay, this is for Target. I thought, well, that would be weird. Target even open right now. I thought, because the red, I thought, was giving that away. I thought, oh, okay. So maybe it's Mitsubishi or Toyota, because, you know, they've got a lot of red in there. Well, Toyota used to, I don't know if they still do. But Mitsubishi maybe has that red in their logo. And I thought, oh, yeah, that would make sense. And I thought, oh, no, this doesn't seem right. There's no cars in this image. I thought, like, similar to Holden, something like that. I thought, this is very weird. There's this a lot of red. And I thought, okay, it must be some other kind of clothing store. No, it wasn't. It was a Colgate. They put it back up at the end. So I saw the ad again, maybe a few days later, and saw the Colgate thing pop up at the start. Like, oh, okay, that makes sense. But it's a weird ad because at no point when I was watching it did I make any connection between anything that was going on and it being for toothpaste or toothbrushes. So again, when we want to talk about bad ads and bad delivery of them, this is one. It really didn't hit on any level. The color association isn't enough, because my color association for red in terms of companies was, I mean, I could name, I'll name 10 companies that are more associated with red in my mind than Colgate. So I got Coca-Cola, Dr. Pepper. I wasn't thinking that originally, but I'll put it in there. Coles, Target, as I already said, Holden, Mitsubishi, what's that? It's 5 products. I did think it was like Noni B or Best and Less, but I didn't think the colors match those. But I'll put Noni B in there as one of them. So that's 6. I thought maybe Kmart as well. That's 7. You know, it's not that hard. I think I could probably come up with a couple more food ones if I needed to. I mean, Dimmicks, if I didn't think it was Dimmicks because it didn't make any sense for it to be Dimmicks. So, you know, hence why I didn't think it was Colgate. But I think those are other companies that I think more associated with red than Colgate is. It'd be like if it was purple, I would go, oh yeah, it's Cadbury. You know, naturally, that's Cadbury. And it may not be, there might be something else, but that's where my mind would go first. So very, very odd ad. And nothing happens. There's no voiceover. It's just music and dancing. So in terms of, I know I've talked about some other products. There was the Cadbury one. It's about, oh yeah, that idea association between buy this product, you'll feel good about yourself, or buy this product, you'll get this nice emotion feeling. I don't think it worked in this Colgate ad, because I'm not thinking about, I'm going to brush my teeth and then dance and jump around. I brush my teeth because I have to brush my teeth and it's for my own hygiene and good health. And it was weird they didn't even go down that angle, because this ad looked like it was relatively new. Like, pull the ad, put a voice over the top talking about, hey, remember your personal hygiene. Make it a hygiene ad in the current situation where that's what everyone's focused on. It just blew my mind that that's where they didn't go, and that they decided to instead just have people dance and jump. So that's my poor ad of the week, but I'll definitely be trying to find a good ad for the next episode, one that actually advertises the product they're focusing on. But that's it. I'll be back in a moment with War and Peace. And finally, War and Peace, as always. Again, I'm still a few chapters behind. I really need to catch up. But I was finishing another book, which I'll do in a future episode in a couple of weeks, I think. So I haven't read it as much as I would have liked, and I probably should have. So I'll have to catch up on that over the next week. So thankfully, I was ahead, because I didn't think it would be this week that I would fall behind. But hey, that's what happened. All that's really happened is there's been a marriage proposal. Prince Andrei and Natasha, they're engaged, although they're going to wait a year because they want her to kind of mature and grow up and make sure it's what she wants. That's about it. That's all that really happened. But I found it quite interesting, because I know a couple of people, some that have had to postpone weddings and things like that, that not necessarily rushed into it, but a year could have made a big difference in the way things worked. Whether if they'd waited a year, they would have had a different relationship, whether the relationship would have existed. I think, again, it's just one of those things that it feels like it's so ahead of its time, that it's talking about maturity and that this female gets to have her decision, which I was a bit critical of at the start of the novel, that they didn't get that choice. So I think it's really, really interesting still that there's just these little nuggets that keep coming out of it. And yeah, that we have this character who does get a choice, even though it's still not super empowering of her, that it's still her choice ultimately to make. So I do think there's still a lot of good value coming out of it, but yeah, I really need to pick it up. But that's where I'm at. Obviously, reading a chapter a day, the target gives me a good clear focus of how I need to catch up. So I'm about 3 days behind of where I'd like to be, but I can catch that up quite quick if I do that 2 chapters a day, which I talked about last episode. Just got to get into it now. But that is it for me for another week. Let me know any thoughts you have, any questions you have, any texts you'd like me to do. Maybe you can give me a recommendation. Find any way you can to do that. The easiest way is EduDaveshin. I've still got to figure out how I can ask people to respond to this. But if you listen to Anchor, write a review. That's another way. I'll see if I can find a way to look at reviews. So thanks for listening. Hope you enjoyed it. Go and watch Parasite.